So welcome to week four of Cafe Theology. So far we've looked at creation, the idea that the cosmos doesn't exist randomly, but by the will and purpose of an intelligent and good and loving person. Yet things have gone seriously wrong with creation, and in the fall, in week two, we saw how creation has become cut off from the person and the purposefulness of God. 2 weeks ago, we saw how God doesn't leave creation to its own devices, but is committed to it and active within it. And we thought about how God is at work in his world. So, Alex, we'd have the first slide. So this week, we're looking at just how committed and just how active God is, and just how much within the world he is, by looking at the doctrine of the incarnation. But first I thought I'd tell you a story about this beach. We've had some lovely holidays in the north of Spain, and on one occasion I heard of this beach, which is called Poo Beach. So I probably should have been a bit wary of it from the beginning. It wasn't far from the resort we were staying in, and it certainly looked nearby on the map. So I persuaded the rest of the family that we should walk there and find it. But of course it was much further than we thought, and we never found it. We walked in the blazing sun for ages through gorse and brambles, and the further we went, the more crotchety everyone got. And there were cries of, "Do you know where we're going, Mum? Are we nearly there yet? Do you actually know how far it is?" All the time I was getting more and more stubborn about, we are going to find it. But eventually had to admit defeat, and we turned back the way we'd come. And to this day, if I'm in danger of getting us all lost or suggest we go somewhere a bit off the beaten track, someone will say, "Oh no, it's another Poo Beach experience." So we've seen so far that God doesn't stop us making bad choices or doing things that are wrong, and we're responsible for our actions, and he respects our freedom. And he won't stop us losing our way if we're stubborn and determined to go in a certain direction. But what the incarnation is about is him joining us in our lostness. And that happened at an actual moment in history when Jesus was born and God became part of his world. And this really was the culmination of all God's dealings with his people up to that point. So what about a definition? Okay. The word incarnation comes from the Latin incarnis, which means literally in the flesh. Incarnation means enfleshment. But I didn't expect to find a reference to chili con carne in a theological book. But con carne literally means with meat, with flesh. Luke states in his gospel that God has come to visit and redeem his people, while John talks about God becoming flesh and making his dwelling among us. Next slide, Alex. In Jesus, God became utterly human. And I just wonder if we could shout out, what does it mean to be human?
Feelings.
Feelings, yeah.
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah.
Make mistakes.
Yeah.
Relational.
Relational, yeah. Good words here from Monday night. Sorry, Sean.
To love.
To love, yeah. She didn't say you, Jim. You're so in tune. Any other ideas?
Made in the image of God.
Yeah. We have language, don't we, and communication. We're born and we die. All those aspects of being human. So in Jesus, God became utterly human, all those things that we'd said. He was human in its entirety, in all the dimensions of humanity. He lived a human life and died a human death. But in saying this, we need to be clear that Jesus didn't cease to be God. He didn't take on our nature and take off his own. He added the essence of humanity to the essence of deity. And neither did he have a human body, but a divine mind. He was a complete human in body, mind, and emotions. And so if that's the case, that God has joined us in our lostness in the person of Jesus, that he's become flesh and made his dwelling among us, what is the significance of that moment in history for us now? And Lloyd offers 11 suggestions. I'm going to touch on 6 of those, and some of the questions for the groups will touch on others. So next slide, Alex. So the incarnation, first of all, shows us what God is like. If you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. See his character, how he lived, and we see the character, heart, and life of God. And so we can also see what God is not like by the same means. And this struck me, that he said we often come at it the wrong way around, because we come, don't we, with all sorts of preconceived notions as to what God is like, and we sort of try to fit Jesus into those, whereas the message of the incarnation is to begin with Jesus and let him shape our understanding of God. So in the incarnation, for example, we have a God who is not remote. He is totally committed to our world, entering into it and all our experiences. Secondly, the incarnation shows us what it is to be human, what we're meant to be like and how we're meant to live. So using the same example about God not being remote, to be truly human then is not to live in a passionless detachment from our world. But to be truly human is to express itself in commitment and involvement and entering the world's suffering and pain. And that's probably a model of humanness that's a bit alien to our culture. We would sort of want to steer clear of some of those things. Thirdly, the incarnation means that only Jesus can reconcile us to God. Jesus can only bring God and us together if he fits and belongs on both sides of the divide. If he's not fully human, then the bridge doesn't quite reach us, and our full humanity is still cut off from God. If he's not fully divine, then we would have fallen short of being able to be part of the divine nature. A fellow creature wouldn't be able to unite us to God. The bridge only extends across the whole divide if Jesus is fully human and fully divine. He's the common ground where we and God meet together. Next one. The incarnation shows us that the more godly we become, the more human we become. Have you ever been worried that the deeper you go into Christianity, the more you might simply become like the Christian sat next to you? That everyone will sooner or later look alike and we'll all become clones of each other? Or that in becoming more godly, you will no longer be able to do the things that make your life enjoyable and worth living? Well, fear not, for the incarnation teaches us that the more like Jesus we become, the more godly and the more human we will become. The only thing we have to leave behind is sin. Nothing else that is human needs to be left behind, because the one we follow is fully human. Nothing about what makes you you is squeezed out by following Jesus. You become more yourself and more the person God made you to be. And linked with this is the fact that because Jesus embraces humanity and divinity, we shouldn't separate what is sacred and what is secular, what is religious and what is ordinary. Okay, next one. The incarnation gives us a pattern for balanced Christian living. It holds the divine and the human together. Serving God doesn't mean abandoning humanity. If we downplay humanity, says Lloyd, we border on fanaticism. So what about these scenarios? One of my friends, she was approached by a Christian man she was on a mission with, who said that God had told him that they were to get married. The fact that she didn't find him attractive and had no desire to marry him didn't seem to be of importance. We need to pray, we need to listen to what God may be saying, but we also need to weigh things up, seek advice when it comes to decisions, and be sensible. The divine does not swamp the human. If one of the clergy at St. Nick's said that they were no longer going to plan sermons, but stand up and allow God to speak through them, you would rightly be expecting a sermon that was probably not very deep, would have no structure to it, and would probably go on forever. The incarnation suggests that you should study and prepare and pray. In 2008, in the United States, an 11-year-old girl died of a treatable diabetes because her parents prayed for healing instead of seeking medical help. God uses our human wisdom and medical expertise to heal. The incarnation gives a pattern for balanced Christian living. The human and divine are held together and should work in partnership together in our lives. There's a really good example in Nehemiah 4, and I know this will gladden Pete's heart because he's looking at Nehemiah at the moment, where there's opposition to the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. And Nehemiah records, they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. So that's a really good example of those two things going together. So, next one. Finally, and briefly, the incarnation has something to say about our evangelism and our pastoral care. That we're concerned with people's whole lives and not just their spiritual lives. That we enter situations of pain and despair and are absolutely wholehearted in how we care for people and open them up to God as we go. So, lots of food for thought in this chapter, and hopefully the groups will help you to explore that a bit further. What you'll see on the list of questions is there's one just slightly different thing you're being asked to do tonight, which is as a group to identify one thing that has struck you that you could share back with the rest of the group before we have our question time. So that's just a slightly different task tonight. So, enjoy.